In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hat.
We are live, you know, ish.
Okay.
So, welcome everybody to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast that weirdly enough started out as a piece of Twilight fan fiction. And then eventually evolved into this.
Yeah.
So, there's that. I'm Tony.
And I'm William. This is episode 75.
75. What is that?
I don't know.
It's a sesquicentennial if it's 150, so this could be a semi-sesquicentennial.
I guess.
There, it is a word like that. It's like a semi-sesquicentennial.
I don't know.
Well, we're that.
That's what we are.
And I think we're an important gift to.
Yes, 75 is really important.
Is it ruby or something?
Oh,
like that?
I don't know. Remember. I have no idea.
Well, these are things, people. We don't know facts, but we know that there are facts.
And because you're, well, actually, people are probably listening to this on some kind of device, aren't they?
Most likely.
All right. Well, never mind. I was going to say because you're listening in front of a computer, you could look it up, and you would know the answer, even though we don't. But you're probably
most
at work.
Of the devices they're listening at on could probably also.
Oh, that's true.
Do it. But someone will find out for us.
But not tell us.
But not. Well, they might on the blog.
Sometimes. Tell us sometimes stuff on the blog. Sometimes we ask for information, and don't get it. And other times we don't ask for information, but we get it anyway.
That is true.
Have we ever asked for information and got it? I suppose we have.
We have. And to be fair, there are things I have not asked for that I have not gotten in terms of information.
You're right. Just to cover all the bases
there.
Yes.
So really the whole spectrum is here. I was sick last week.
Oh, yes. How are you feeling?
Ruined everything. Fine. Was it like an ear infection?
Mm-hmm.
That, like, messed up the rest of me.
Well, you know, ear infections are connected to your sinuses.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is an infection, and your body responds. Yeah, so I was having, you know, immune
fever.
But,
and
yeah, but that's just weird for me. I'm not used to that. But yeah, that happened. But it was just the one day. I took a lot of meds and stuff, and it wasn't ever bad enough. I needed antibiotics or anything.
Well, that's good.
But I took a lot of meds, and I was very careful with the ear and stuff, and it became okay. So
good.
So how was your 2 weeks?
Oh,
I know some of it was spent at the state fair. Woo!
Yes, I went to the state fair. That was probably the biggest thing that happened. Otherwise, you know, just working on projects.
What was the latest deep fried creation?
I don't know, because, you know, I don't eat a lot of the stuff.
That is true. What did you eat? You were there for 5 hours.
Well,
you must have eaten.
Well, the thing is, even when I was younger and I would have eaten a lot of stuff there, my family, you know, was rather large, but also not very wealthy. So whenever we went to the fair, we packed lunch and we ate that. I don't remember eating very much of anything at the fair when I used to go. So I'm not used to thinking of the fair, which is weird because the Iowa State Fair, most people go, probably the food is probably the main reason for
a
lot of people.
I would not be surprised.
And that's just not something that my head does. It doesn't think of the state fair as a place you go to eat food. So we took food, we packed it, we had lunch. Which is more appropriate for me now, considering I wouldn't eat most of the stuff that they have there, and I don't go to the fair for the food. I go to the agricultural building so I can see how the gardens have been doing in Iowa, and the field crops too, and the cultural building because a lot of Iowa artists, photographers, painters, sculptors are displaying things there, and I like to go to the 4-H building so I can see what, you know, a lot of the Iowa 4-H kids are doing. Gives me hope for the future. Some of these projects these kids do are amazing. And those are the three things I like to do most. There's a few other things I might do if I have time or if I'm with someone else and they want to go look at the quilts or the needlepoint or want to look at the baked goods competitions. But see, on the first Thursday of the fair, a lot of that stuff isn't even there yet.
Yeah, yeah, because it's the first day of the fair.
Right. In fact, we almost didn't get to see the vegetables in the agricultural building because they were roped off for judging. But before we left, they took the ropes down and we could look, and I was amazed. You know, we've had a drought here.
Yes, yes, we have.
For a very long time.
We're trying to make up for it recently.
Yes, but yes we've had some rain recently. But I've been to the fair when we had dry years or years that had weird weather and not very many entries for the vegetables, or they looked pretty sickly or bad. This year, I've never seen so many entries in each category for everything. I mean, every kind of pepper you can think of, tomatoes, three or four different varieties of tomatoes, apples, grapes. The tables were full of entries. They all looked good. And I don't understand it, because...
Genetic engineering.
Well, you know what
God bless Monsanto.
I do have a theory. Well, see, okay. The field crop section, the field crops looked okay, but they didn't actually look as good as usual, which, you know, you can expect, especially the corn. But here's what I think happened with the vegetables. See, in the drought, all the water that the gardens were getting were, you know, was being delivered by the gardener, him or herself. So the moisture was being controlled. Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, and they were ensuring it got the water rather than, like, you sort of estimate on the rain. But this time you're like, I know how much rain there has been. Zero.
Zero, right. So you know
exactly how much water you're
putting. Right, and
on.
You
That's
water
a good point.
And you water this vegetable this much and this because one problem in gardening is that vegetables can get too much water, which either they can drown or they can attract a fungus
the lettuces will
or whatever
split.
Else. Right. So. Or another thing is that
if
you apply chemicals. One of the biggest problems with that is that they can wash away. Okay, but if you're controlling all of the moisture and it's all coming in a lot of people drip water their gardens now. They don't like spray water over the plants. Then you can control, you know, if you put an insecticide or a fungicide powder, for example, on the plants, it'll stay there and it'll be effective while you're watering the roots. So I just have a feeling that because of the drought... that they could control the water, but I think maybe also there was better pest control. I don't know how the drought affected pests.
Oh, okay, but it's possible that the drought makes that more difficult.
Right, because this year we had Japanese beetles again this year.
Yes,
who completely ate all of the foliage off of our fruit trees last year. I mean, just and very quickly. This year, they were present, but they weren't as, I don't know, voracious as before.
They were hot and tired.
Well, I don't know what it was. I mean, I think the Japanese beetles sort of work in cycles anyway. But it might have been that the weather wasn't really conducive to their life cycle or something. I don't know.
I feel like there's an old, like, 1980s joke in here about the Japanese being very efficient and hardworking. And now they're here in America and they've become lazy and stupid over time. I don't think
we want to go there.
I know our garden, I say our garden, the producer and the neighbor's gardens, their garden, some stuff has not done well because of the drought, but the stuff that has happened has come out really good. We've had a lot of tasty stuff out of there.
Well, another
thing... And tomato, like last year, we've had tomatoes for miles.
Another thing is that a lot of plants that people typically plant in gardens in Iowa actually like humid weather. You know, the only drawback is if it's humid and not raining, of course, that's not good. But if you're applying water and it's humid, that actually, a lot of plants actually like that. Of course, a lot of the plants that we grow in our gardens today are from, you know, South America originally, you know, tomatoes and potatoes and all these plants. So it's probably just the fact that they could control the water completely, and maybe there was some pest control automatically that kind of came with the drought too, but man, I just couldn't believe. I was really expecting that the vegetables wouldn't work out. Now, the sections of the display where the large, you know, like the jumbo vegetables, there's a place where the jumbo pumpkin is and the jumbo tomatoes. Well, of course, those were smaller than usual, but for normal vegetables, they were all fine. They looked great, but But yeah, that's basically the big news from the Iowa State Fair.
I almost thought about going this year because the weather, usually the weather's crazy hot right around there. Oh, yeah. And it has been crazy hot, and then it sort of broke right around that. And I've never been to the Iowa State Fair. I went to the Oregon one a lot. I even worked there for several years. Producer's never been to any state fair.
Oh. Well, that's not true.
What?
I marched in the Illinois State Fair. We got on a bus. They put us in wool uniforms because this is what we did.
Yeah.
We marched for like, am I allowed to, we have an explicit tag. We marched for fucking ever with people yelling at us because we were exhausted by the end of the play. Why aren't you playing any music? And then we finally got to the state fair and we were there for like 5 minutes. Okay, longer than that, but we were there long enough to go to the bathroom, basically, and then we got back on the bus and we went home. That is my sole state fair experience.
Yeah, I'm going to say you really haven't been to the state fair.
What instrument did you play?
Then I played flute.
Later she played piccolo because the flute was too heavy.
No, that is not true. I did play piccolo later. And then when I got to college, I got tired of being in the back, and so I started playing cymbals.
I was also a flute player.
I did not know that.
Why did I think you were trombone?
I don't know.
Because you're wrong.
I was a flute player.
That could be. I played flute for 2 weeks.
I played for several years, and I did fairly well. As far as I know, I was the only male flute player in the entire state of Iowa.
I picked up the flute, unfortunately, for some reason, in my school, orchestra, which was all the stringed stuff, started in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And band, which was all the rest of the stuff, started in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And so I started in fifth grade to play flute, but that year the band practice and the orchestra practice were at the exact same times, and we tried to do, I went to one and then the other, you know, alternating. It really didn't work, and I had already been playing the bass for a year, and so it was either drop that or drop the flute that I'd been doing for 2 weeks, and so I dropped the flute.
Well,
otherwise, I would have been the premier male flautist in the entire Western United States.
Well, I didn't like brass instruments. I wanted to play. What I really wanted to play was saxophone, but the reeds tickled my lip, and I just couldn't do it. So then my band director, had me try the flute, which a lot of people couldn't play. They couldn't manage blowing.
I had a hell of a time with it.
Blowing over the hole, but I did it right away. And
that is a very complicated one for me. I don't know, hitting that spot.
But I did it right away, and I was fairly good at it. I mean, I was first chair for the years that I played. But then, and I marched with the flute for a number of years. But then, like when I was a junior and senior, I was a percussionist. I played the bells, which is a xylophone-like instrument, and some drums. And I was a drum major when I was a senior.
And in his college years, he was that guy in Jethro Tull who stands on one leg.
No. No, I kind of gave up that kind of flute, and I started playing whistles instead, which I'm not nearly as good at, but I like to play them anyway. But slowly. I don't, you know, those, you're supposed to be able with a Irish whistle to be able to play these fast little jigs and stuff, which I'm not very good at that.
No, I messed around with them, and I can never do that well, but
I like playing the airs and the slower ballads and stuff. I like doing that.
I usually just took old TV themes I knew and tried to recreate them.
But the fair's a big deal in Iowa because it's an agricultural state. I mean,
and they make a lot of things out of butter.
Yeah, which I told you that I met the woman that did it before, didn't I?
I thought she was always just like there.
Well, there's a new woman doing it now. She's been doing it since 2006. There's
an
older woman who recently died who passed it on to this younger woman in 2006, and the Duffy was the name of the woman that was doing it before. She passed away a couple of years ago, I think. But I met her because I worked at the fair, and she, you know, explained to me how the whole butter cow thing works. They make, every year at the Iowa State Fair, they make a full-sized cow.
Yes.
From butter, and other things too, but that's the thing they always do, is the cow. And she explained to me how it worked, and I saw I saw what it looked like before there was butter on it, and they used the butter multiple years. And that year was,
wait, before there was butter on it?
Well,
it's not solid butter?
No.
That's disappointing. I genuinely thought it was wholly made
out
of butter
and chicken wire and stuff.
That's terribly disappointing.
Well, that's how it works.
Were there any Olympians this year? I guess we didn't have any big Iowa Olympians this year, did we?
Well, in a way, the what was the young woman's name? Douglas was her last name? Was Gabby Douglas?
I think that's an engineer from Mass Effect 3.
No. Oh my gosh, I'm probably getting it
wrong. I think that literally is the name of an engineer from Mass Effect 3.
Anyway, the one of the young gymnasts who did really well in the Olympics, she was trained in West Des Moines by the same person that trained the other famous...
Shawn Johnson.
Yeah, well, who was actually from West Des Moines.
Yes.
But this,
and who had a butter sculpture of her in 08.
This young woman is from Virginia, but she trained in West Des Moines. But anyway. No, this year they had the Seven Dwarves and Snow White and the Evil Queen and stuff. I didn't really get a very close
look. Did Snow White look like Jennifer Goodwin?
I didn't get a good look, really. Because I don't really care so
much
about it.
Was there Stealthy the Eighth Dwarf?
No. But...
Oh, that would have been awesome.
But what she told me was they used the butter like 8 years in a row, and when I was working there, it was the last year they were going to throw it out, but it smelled horrible. And I couldn't believe she could work in those conditions.
What?
Sculpting that cow.
Yeah, you're really just disillusioning me for the whole butter sculpture deal.
But yeah, Iowa's an agricultural state, and I mean, just about everybody.
I just assumed they took it someplace and got a lot of loaves of bread and went to town.
No, they save it year after year until it's really rancid and it's gross, and then they finally throw it out. But just about everybody in Iowa is, you know, their job or their life is touched by the agricultural whatever. I mean, if you don't live in a state that is heavy in agriculture, it is a very different experience growing up in one of those states. And Iowa, of course, is one. So the state fair is a big deal.
I always find, because Oregon, it has a lot of agriculture.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But there is weird social separation.
Oh.
There is sort of an urban area of Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and then there are agricultural areas. So really, it wasn't until I was a grown man and no longer lived there that I realized how much agriculture there is in Oregon.
Oh.
Whereas here, it is just so intertwined.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
even if you live in Des Moines, which mm-hmm. is the biggest city in the state,
mm-hmm.
farming has so much to do with that city.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if you lived in Oregon, if you lived in the major metros, which are all in a line, Portland to Salem to Eugene, very little in those cities had to do with the agriculture.
Oh, wow.
And if you go west, there's just mountains and then there's the beach. And so you didn't have much there either. It's only certain areas.
I can see that. But, I mean, in Des Moines, which is the state's capital, of course, you can drive 5 minutes from any place in Des Moines, even the heart of the city, and there's a cornfield or a bean field there.
And you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a farmer.
And so not very many people in Iowa work directly in agriculture anymore.
No, because Monsanto and DeKalb own them all.
But there are a lot of people who work for companies that work directly with farmers, and by that I mean farm machinery manufacturers or chemical manufacturers or whatever.
Or production facilities.
Yeah, and
every processing facilities.
And everybody's impacted by the industry itself. For example, the big industry in Des Moines...
Is that your ride?
No. The biggest industry in Des Moines is insurance. You know, crop insurance and farmland insurance and farm equipment insurance... You know, these are huge for the industry in Des Moines. So everybody in Iowa is touched by the agriculture industry and cares about it on some level. So, you know, the fair becomes something that's kind of a big deal to everybody, really. And millions of people go there every year. It's a huge event. And I believe, well, I don't know, if you looked up the Iowa State Fair online, you'd find out all kinds of interesting information about it. It's supposed to be the inspiration behind the... Is it a musical, State Fair? Or just a film? I don't remember. Or a play or something. I don't know much about it, but Iowa State Fair is supposedly the inspiration for that story. Even though in the actual story it doesn't take place in Iowa, but... Whatever. And I love it. I love going. It's one of my favorite things to do. One of my favorite places to go. You should go. You've never been there, huh?
No, I haven't. The combination of the distance and, like I said, usually the heat. And, of course, nowadays I hardly walk or anything, mm-hmm. and so the prospect of that bugs me. But yeah, one of these years, especially think we should take the producer, because like I said, I have years and years of state fair memories. But she's never been, except that one crazy story you guys just
heard. Well, I think she'd like it. I think there's a lot of things she'd like about it.
Well, and we do go, or at least we used to. We haven't been able to lately. We go to the county fair here, the Johnson County Fair.
Yeah, I missed that this year.
The last few years have been the trip to Virginia that happens every year has been at the same time. And so we missed it for a few years because of that.
I was talking to my dad about county fairs, and he was pointing out how the Marion County Fair, I grew up in Marion County, and it used to be...
I grew up in Marion County.
Are you...
Oregon, Marion County, Oregon.
Really?
Just about every state has a Marion County.
No, I realize that, but yeah, I didn't know if you were... I did. Okay, well, I grew up in Marion County, Iowa, and the county fair, there used to be a two-week thing, and the sale barn was right across from the fairgrounds. It's a Hy-Vee now, but, you know, he was talking to me about what growing up on a farm used to mean in Iowa, and it used to be back-breaking, hard, terrible hard work. But there were a lot of rewards to it, too, and a lot of farmers, as a result, were very self-sufficient. My dad talked about how they used to go to town. They hardly ever had to go to town to get anything. When they did, it was like salt and flour if they weren't getting it from someone who was milling their own.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was hard life, but it was a great life. And now, you know, we've got a guy farming the farm I grew up on.
By the way, the Hell's Angels are going by outside, so... I apologize for that.
This guy farms our farm and several other farms, like 1,500 acres of farms he owns. And essentially, what he does, first of all, to farm all that land, he doesn't really have any livestock to speak of at all, so he doesn't do that. But basically, it's, you know, for 4 months out of the year, he gets in a tractor and he drives it all day doing various things, planting, spraying, not very much cultivating or doing anything like that. Basically planting or spraying and then harvesting. And that's it. When, you know, farming used to be so much more complicated than that in terms of what you grew, when you grew it, and you had to cultivate it. You had to figure out if you were going to plow this year or that year, if you were going to plant clover. And, you know, it's just all kinds of complex things. And you had to have livestock because you couldn't just rely on your grain crop. So you know, he was pointing out how this guy who farms this land, he made $70,000 on my dad's 105 acres last year. Well, that's before expenses. And so, you know, he probably kept, I mean, even if he only kept after expenses 20,000 of that, you know, he's got 1,500 acres where he's making probably 20 grand every 100. So he's making a pretty good living.
Yeah.
But he has to, when he goes to the store, he has to buy all his food just like everybody else, you or me. You know, and so maybe he's clearing a lot of money for like only 4 weeks or only 4 months of work, basically just driving a tractor the whole time, and that seems like gravy. But at the same time, you know, he's got to carry a wallet with cash in it and go to the store to buy all his food just like everybody else. And so it's kind of a strange thing. And, you know, like you pointed out, Monsanto and all these companies, like, he can't keep his seed. He can't plant and then hold some seed back for next year. He has to buy seed new every year because Monsanto has made it so that you can't replant seeds.
Yeah.
And so it's just a whole different world. And it's kind of weird, actually, but, you know, well, that's the way of the world right now in agriculture. And anyone who comes from a Midwestern or some of the Western agricultural states, you know, knows it and feels it.
And I think this is why we're going to have to call this episode Little William on the Prairie.
Well, you know, these things have concerned me for ages as someone who grew up on a farm, and it bothers me a lot, too, but what can you do about it, really? But I took all that time and you didn't get to talk about your 2 weeks other than being sick.
Yep. You ruined our lives.
Sorry.
That's okay. We have a big group of agricultural nerds.
We do?
Yeah, that's where our demographic lies. So there
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so they eat this stuff up. So
no, they don't. You're lying. Great. You're just trying to make me feel better, which is really weird for you.
No, I'm obviously lying, so you'll know I'm lying and then feel worse. It's still me.
Okay.
It's the old double bluff.
Gotcha.
And that was all you did for 2 weeks? Is go to the state fair and farm?
Well, mostly. I mean, well, see, the thing is, my 2 Sundays ago was the anniversary of my mom's passing, and then the week after that is her birthday. So I went back down to the farm the very next week and spent time with family and stuff. So yeah, it was the last 2 weeks were very much a down at the farm, thinking about agriculture and the sorry state of our food system and agricultural system in the United States, and contemplating the terrible apocalypse that will occur when our monoculture is decimated by a single disease that kills everything.
Did you do a lot of squinting over the back 40 acres and picking up a handful of dirt and running through your hands and looking wistful? No.
The corn looked pretty good, though. I was really surprised as much of a drought as we've had. But, you know, these drought-resistant strains they've come out with, I mean, they can handle it, I guess. And the prices are going through the roof, so... I mean, Dad.
Once the corn becomes self-aware, we're going to have some trouble.
Dad said that even if he gets half the yield he got last year, he should make more money because of the prices.
So I used to have an ear to the prices when I worked for the farming newspaper. I could tell you a lot about which elevators were paying what, but now I don't know jack, and I'm okay with that. Corn prices don't come up a lot in my day to day.
No, I guess they don't. Or hog futures or anything.
Hog
like that.
Futures come up quite a bit. I do a side business of reading the fortunes of telling fortunes of pigs.
I know very little about.
That was hilarious. Come on. Hog futures.
Yes. I actually know very little about livestock trading and stuff because we didn't have any, but
it's similar to Pokemon.
Shut up.
You train them up and then you trade them with your friends and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Nope, we were green.
Black Angus steer, I choose you! Shit. That may have to be the title of this episode. Yep, it might have to be Black Angus steer, I choose you. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to undermine you there, but.
That's alright, that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, my 2 weeks were extremely eventful.
Were they?
They actually kind of were. My Dresden Files game is going awesome.
Oh.
Crazy awesome. Last game was such a clusterfuck. It's unbelievable. Somebody got shot in the back. Somebody got their jaw dislocated and knocked, beaten into unconsciousness. Somebody accidentally set fire to the building they were in. And that wasn't even my idea. The player came up with that one. Like, they didn't do it on purpose, but the player came up with their character doing it accidentally. And that caused all sorts of things. They were trying to save all these people, and they couldn't save one. They couldn't get the cage open in time, and the fire was coming. So one of them opened up a portal to the Never Never and pushed her through on the belief that... sending her into another dimension where they had no idea what was going to be on the other side was still better odds than a definite death in the fire. And I'm like, that's going to come back later to haunt you. I can make an entire villain campaign out of that. Yeah, it is a total disaster. And Ben's getting really into his role-playing. He's gone nuts because this whole thing involves trying to get a hold of his sister who is missing. And so he's been going crazy about that.
There are remarkably few farming characters in role-playing games.
Very seldom. You can do it in D&D. That's one of the skilled professions, I believe. They kept talking about it in Happy Jacks, somebody who made a character, and all of his skill points he put into profession farming. And he was a character. He was like an adventurer. And I think his actual class was like warrior or something like that. But he really just wants to be a farmer. And that was his whole deal. And I saw 2 movies.
Oh, okay.
Saw Mulholland Drive.
Oh, you did see it.
The David Lynch film.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's David Lynch. It's weird. Don't really know what happened. I really think I liked it. I've been reading a lot on the internet. Theories. Nobody really knows except David, and he's not saying. But there's lots of theories, and I think I want to see it again, and I think maybe I want to own it and watch it repeatedly.
Really?
Not to try and figure it out. I don't think I ever will. But I get a lot from it, and it's fascinating. I would highly recommend it to anyone on the understanding that it's very weird. You will not understand what happened at the end. And I don't just mean you won't get the end. The whole movie, you'll be like, what? But it's very compelling within that. And highly evocative and really well shot. And yeah, no, I would recommend it as long as you understand that. It is a very movie lover's movie.
I'll have to see it again.
Things like that. And last night we saw Moonrise Kingdom.
I don't even know what that is.
That's Wes Anderson's current one. It was in limited release.
Oh, yes, his latest one. I heard it was really good.
I very much enjoyed it. I liked it a lot, which... I wasn't going to go see it because I'm not... this whole household is not that into Wes Anderson.
I'm not either.
I
like some of his things, but I don't.
But so I wasn't going to, but it's just been getting such reviews, and I have too many people who are like, you need to go see it. I want to hear what you think. And so I was like, okay, we'll go see it if it's still there. And it was, so we went. I very much liked it. I, as you know, cannot speak for the producer. I can quote her.
Okay.
When we left and I asked, she said, first she said, I disliked it the least of any Wes Anderson movie I've seen. Mm-hmm. When I said, but did you actually like it? She said, what was there for me to like?
Oh.
And that was sort of as much as I could get, and I left it at that, because I enjoyed it a lot. It's a very odd movie. It's I feel like it's a myth. It's surreal in that way that it's a fairly mundane story, but you're like, this didn't really happen. You know, it's that sort of vibe. Mm-hmm. But it has a tremendous sense of truth to it. Mm-hmm. Like, this didn't happen, but I get this. I don't know if you're getting what I'm even saying. Like, it's... it's a weird sort of template. Like, it has this certain... it's surreal is a good word for it. Mm-hmm. Like, because... And there's no one thing you can pin down, because it's just stuff... I mean, there's nothing about it that you're like, that makes no sense or anything. You're just like... it feels like a story. It doesn't feel like a real thing. It feels like a myth. It feels like a fable, mm-hmm. in its way. It's very nice compared to a lot of Wes Anderson stuff. I mean, it has its dark, seedy undercurrents in it. It has certain modernist tones in it that still give it that edge. Mm-hmm. And it deals with a lot of realities, particularly children. It's fairly focused on children and the traumas children can go through growing up and stuff. But it's relatively sweet and fairly funny. I would qualify it probably as a comedy. Mm-hmm. But I very much liked it. I enjoyed it a lot. And it got some good performances, especially out of the two main people, who the kids. Very good. Yeah, I liked it a lot. So, and those are the big... I'm still playing Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. Still enjoying that. Almost done with the collection of Arthur C. Clarke things I've been reading.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoying that. Almost finished. Not sure what I'm going to read next. But I'm going to stop there because we've taken up a lot of time here. So, hat.
Yes.
Got a lot of good things in the hat, people. We can always use more. Please feel free to email our magical hat of talking at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Email a question, a topic, whatever. Whatever you want us to talk about, email it there. And it'll end up in the hat. And we'll draw randomly and we might talk about it.
We might.
Like this one.
From Beth.
Beth!
Dear the Magical Talking Hat. That's always nice when they're...
when they're polite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What constitutes good barbecue sauce?
This is an age-old question.
Yeah, it really
is. That has sparked wars, I believe.
Yeah.
Certain large regional distinctions and rivalries. And really... the whole of the world has not been able to answer this in many, many years, so I think we can take care of it.
Yeah. I think this is a perfect question for us.
Now, I would say there are three axes of flavor in barbecue sauce.
Three
main axes. Most people think two, but I think there are three.
Well, people usually go with two because it makes a nice little, you know, you can do a yes. cross, and then you have these quadrants.
So we have to think in dimensions here.
Yes.
And this and I do this because there are generally considered three distinct styles of barbecue.
Oh, okay.
And I feel that they each have a certain thing to their sauce. But one could argue two instead. The main two you're going to deal with are the vinegar axis and the sweet axis.
Sure. What's the third then?
Tomatoey. Because you will get that in some. I feel like that's a thing that comes up. But vinegar and sweet are the primary ones. When you go south or Memphis style, you're going to get the vinegary stuff. You're going to get much more of that bite to the sauces. They're often thinner sauces. They're often less saucy sauces. Like, you get a lot more dry rubs and stuff down there. And they work a lot with pork. Kansas City barbecue, as I understand it, more on the sweet side, more that dark, saucy sauce that you're used to seeing, work a lot more with beef. And Texas barbecue is something of a hybrid. And I feel like that's where you're going to get tomato, if you get that. But the more I say it, the less I'm convincing myself. So maybe we should just work with this.
Well, I was thinking when you said tomato also that there are a lot of other things that are used in barbecue sauce besides, you know, tomato. So,
oh, yeah. There are many barbecue sauces that don't use tomato at all.
Right. So you could say that other dimension is, you know, whatever thing besides sweet or sour is working in there to create flavor, yeah, like if it's the tomato or if it's whatever else they're using.
And but sweet and vinegar do have to be axes because they are by no means necessarily exclusive.
That's right.
You can do sweet with a lot of vinegar and, you know, that kind of thing.
I think the Iowa sauce, I mean, the sauces that are popular in Iowa are kind of... I mean, they obviously use tomato paste or something because they're almost always dark.
Red, thick.
But they seem to be going after kind of a, almost a molasses or a kind of a, I mean, you get that tang. There's a tang to it.
Yeah, but
there's definitely a sweet.
I think Iowa largely borrows from Kansas City.
That's probably
true. Probably because of the distance.
That's probably true.
And that's the style I tend to prefer. And oddly enough, while I really do like pork, when it comes to barbecue, I'm frequently less of a pulled pork guy.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, it's because it always seems a bit dry to me, and because if you're really doing it southern style, it tends to be very vinegary, and I don't prefer that in my barbecue.
Yeah, here in Iowa, if you go someplace and you're going to have something that's got barbecue sauce on it, it's always that sweet, smoky, only slightly tangy, red type of sauce.
I mean, here in the global community, you'll still find places that somebody came from somewhere else, from south, and they do.
Well, here in Iowa City, yeah. I mean, yeah. But like, if you go, most places, if they say a barbecue sandwich, what they mean is, first of all, they don't even mean meat that's been cooked in the barbecue way.
No, frequently. Well, and you run into that anyway. If you go to somebody's house and they say they're going to give you barbecue chicken.
Yeah.
That's just chicken and they put barbecue sauce.
Yeah, exactly. But the barbecue sauce they use is the kind we've been describing.
Yes, very,
the sweet, which was slightly tangy.
Which I think
sauce.
is nationally big, because if you go to the store and buy barbecue sauce, you're not going to find that vinegary thin stuff.
Oh, that's true.
You're going to find Casey Masterpiece and its equivalents.
And if you buy barbecue potato chips, what does it taste
that's
like?
That's the same like thing. Stuff, yeah. And I feel like that's what I prefer. I like the sweet sauce. I like a little vinegar to it sometimes, but I tend to be a sweet, thick sauce guy.
But I think in the South, you find a lot more variety, I mean, all through the South.
Well, because barbecue is very big down there, and everybody has their own
real barbecue, where you're cooking the meat really long time.
We're mostly talking about smoking.
Yeah.
Is what we're talking about, smoking.
And that's what barbecue really means. Yeah. You might not put any sauce on it. It's just just a long-cooked meat, and, you know, the sauce is incidental.
Oh, you messing with this?
Whereas up here, a lot of people think of barbecue as
you, but it doesn't come
almost in terms entirely in terms of the sauce, Or they think of barbecue as grilling.
Yeah.
Which it isn't, technically.
No. And for a long time, there was no good barbecue in this town, and it was a problem.
Is there now?
I feel there is. Okay.
Real barbecue.
There are people who disagree with me, and I'm inclined to bow to their expertise. But for my coarse barbecue palate, as it were, I think we've got quite a few now.
Okay.
Jimmy Jack's is the common one. That was the real first one that was big over here. I like them. They are a good go-to for just about everything. Mm-hmm. Their pulled pork is a little dry. The Pit downtown, I like their ribs. They do them a little different. They cut them before they serve them, and I think maybe even grill them a little bit after that, because they seem sort of a piece. Very good. Worst brisket I've ever had. It was thinly sliced brisket. One time I'm like, I'm not going to get the ribs, I'm going to get brisket. Thinly sliced, dry as a bone.
Yeah.
Don't know what was wrong with that. I'm a big brisket fan, and that was just sad. And then Wildwood out on Herbert Hoover Highway is a country line dancing bar that also does barbecue. And I recently went there, took Trish there one night to eat. I really liked their barbecue. Theirs is a serious, serious long-term smoke that has, like, the smoke ring on the meat and stuff. Mm-hmm. But I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. And their pulled pork is very tender, very moist.
Well, I think a lot of people from the South don't think Northerners really understand.
Oh, yeah.
Or have very high standards for barbecue. And they're probably right, because
it's sort of like, there are places in town I think are really good for sushi. And you know what? Japanese people would probably laugh in my face. Will you punch that cat?
Hey, don't do that. Don't do that.
Does barbecue play any role in your life now as a vegetarian, vegan, hippie freak?
A barbecue sauce might. I mean, I like the taste of barbecue sauce.
Well, and if you go to Jimmy Jack's, they got a portobello.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a barbecue sauce made in Iowa called Cookies that is pretty good. A lot of people in other parts of the country even like it quite a bit.
Back before I had cable, I used to watch Cookies' little program because I only had like 5 channels, and like Sunday morning there was nothing else on.
But I like that kind of barbecue sauce. But, you know, I was a vegetarian before I realized what the difference was between real barbecue and northern barbecue. And so I don't know what good barbecue from the South. I mean, I've been in the South around places where there supposedly is good barbecue, but I was a vegetarian by then and not even interested. So
what William's saying is he doesn't know at all. So he's just dead weight on this show.
But we haven't really answered what constitutes good barbecue sauce. I mean, I've said what I like, but it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, I think you're just playing with those elements. I mean, mm-hmm. Some spice is good. If I'm going to do it, there's got to be some spice involved.
Yeah.
But I've become much more into spice as I get older. Mm. I've slowly discovered that my capacity for spicy food is much greater than I thought it was.
Yeah, mine too, oddly.
And also that all these ad campaigns based around spicy things are really all full of bullshit.
What do you mean?
Anytime any fast food place that, oh, the big spicy thing, you know, Taco Bell has their volcano menu and stuff.
And you finally risk them. Bad.
I mean, they're tasty. I eat the volcano burrito now. It's one of my favorite things at Taco Bell. But for years, I wouldn't touch that stuff because I'm like, I like kind of spicy, but I want crazy. And I found out that none of them are, which makes sense, because if they were really up there, like, nobody would order them.
Well, that's another thing about Northerners is the tolerance in general for people in the North is not for too spicy.
Well, and that's how we've discovered. We won't go to a lunch buffet at any of the Indian restaurants in town anymore because it's bland, because they do the buffet for the most conservative palate as far as spice is concerned. And so it's all mild, mild, super mild.
Oh, when you go to an Indian restaurant here in Iowa City, they very typically will, if you tell them you want it spicy,
absolutely.
They'll say, I don't know if you want or not.
We've never been willing to risk hot. We go for medium.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I'm like, I could do with a little more. But that's the gradient, mild, medium, or hot, at the one we go to in particular. Yeah, I'm like, I'm not willing to risk hot.
No, I usually.
But if you go to the buffet, it's always got to be really mild because, you know, people are just walking in. Because we went to this place and we loved this one place. And when we went there for the lunch buffet one day and we're like, this sucks. And then we were like, that other one we went to where their buffet sucked, Maybe we should give them a try again and just not get the buffet. Because maybe it's just the buffets that suck. But yeah, I mean, I think... I really think when you're... I mean, barbecue sauce is going to be to taste. It's absolutely going to be to taste. But I feel like you should really concentrate on those two axes in particular. Sweet and vinegar. And where you want to be on that line. I think those are two large aspects of barbecue that are most important.
This is makes me think about the fact that spicy and barbecue in the real sense of barbecue, not really indigenous to Iowa cuisine.
No.
Iowa is about...
And I don't even think of barbecue as often a two... I mean, there are spicy ones, but I don't think
I'm just saying both of those things. If you came to Iowa and you wanted something that was distinctly Iowan, what you'd probably have is just a cut of meat of some kind, steak or pork or beef, and it would be fire grilled, and it might have some kind of seasoning on it when it's cooked, but otherwise that's it. There you go. If you want to put A1 on it or barbecue sauce, whatever you want, you can do that.
Yeah.
But I mean you've heard the expression meat and potatoes, and that is Iowa 100%.
I feel like that's the region though. Because I feel like you get that in Kansas and Nebraska.
No, that's probably true. It's probably a whole Midwestern, even Western, yeah, East United States kind of thing.
Things will change a little bit. The further you head north, you get into some of the Scandinavian influence, like in Minnesota,
yes, right,
does
right.
it. And the further south you head, of course, it becomes a different type
right, a little bit. Right.
But it's also all just so tricky nowadays because it is all so global.
Yeah,
at this point. It's always hilarious to talk to people about how I never discovered biscuits and gravy till I came here. And I tell people that, and they're like, that's not a Midwest thing. That's a Southern thing that has just come up here. And I'm like, well, that's true, but this is where I've experienced it.
Still,
and
I mean,
biscuits and gravy. I had biscuits and gravy for lunch today.
Still, Iowa is, I don't know, it's mostly, again, it's not very spicy food. You know, with the exception of the sausage, I mean, people make their own sausage and
stuff, and it
can be kind of spicy, but I wouldn't say it's bland. It's just, you know, Iowa's not a state where you're going to find the hottest hot sauce or the best barbecue or anything
But it's changing. You can get some really good Mexican around here.
No, that's true, but mostly what Iowa is just straight up a cut of meat, whatever it is, pork or beef, and grilling it on an open flame. I mean, that's what Iowa's kind of good for in terms of food. And also some fresh garden vegetables. You can get that in a lot of places. Although Iowa doesn't... Iowa, as an agricultural state, doesn't provide a lot of, human produce food for the nation.
Corn, beans, pork, beef.
Yeah, and mostly in terms of grains, corn and beans. And the corn is mostly only good for, like, feeding cattle.
And the beans just goes into every damn thing in the world.
A lot of the
now.
Beans feed cattle too, and high fructose corn syrup. We don't really feed the world directly from Iowa anymore, unless it's pork and some beef. You're right,
and some beef. More beef than people realize.
That's true. But
Iowa's not known for beef, and it kind of should be.
Well, yes, because if you don't get your beef from Iowa, the beef you get was fed from corn grown in Iowa anyway. And of course pork is, we're huge pork producers here, so
but
for your normal produce, Iowa does, we do have produce farms, especially organic produce farms, and you can get here in Iowa City, especially, you can buy all your produce local and organic if you want. It's great. But no farms that are producing it as a commodity. All of that is, you know, mostly California, Northern California.
California and Florida.
And Oregon, too. And Florida. California and Florida are the big ones.
Yeah, and as you creep up the West Coast, you get some. But California and Florida are big. And then a lot of it's Central and South America, too.
Yeah, that's right. We import a lot of food, which is amazing that we do that. Considering how much arable land we have,
yeah.
I think we wouldn't have to do that. But
thank you, Beth, for your lovely question that is offensive to vegans because they can't answer.
No, it's not.
So, Project Runway, new season started up. One of the guys is a freegan.
Is a what?
A freegan.
What's
one of the dumpster diving peoples. That's what they're calling themselves.
They're calling
now.
Them what?
Freegans.
Why are they?
It's free. Oh, it's like a vegan, but it's free. And they're not really vegan. They just eat whatever's in the dumpster.
Whatever's free.
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
All right. Ezzy, did you want to read this one? No, you just wanted to sniff it? You done?
Well, yeah, I don't know if she's interested.
You can't tell. She likes to play coy. I hope you guys can hear me over the cat. Not the sound of the cat, the actual physical cat blocking my face from the mic. Mm. This one is from Hard Hat Number One.
Mark.
Mark, did I tell you when he called me a while back?
He called you.
He called me because they were going to be in town.
Oh.
It was sort of last minute, so we didn't actually get to see him. But for a second, he's like, hey, it's Mark. And I couldn't put it together. He's like, Mark? And he said, Mark McKibben. And I just got it. But before I had a chance to say anything, he's like, Hard Hat Number One? I was like, arrgh! So yes, Hard Hat Number One, Mark. Mark McKibben writes, Dear TMTH, which always makes me think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, me too.
iOS or Android? This is going to be a useless question for us.
Yeah, because we don't really...
First of all, neither of us own phones.
No.
Your household has one old-timey non-smartphone.
Yeah. That we really
and the producer and I have never owned a cell phone of any sort.
Well, and we don't, the phone we do have, we don't use it like most people do.
No, you don't. Pisses me off.
We don't carry it around. We don't.
I tried to call you when you were at the station.
Well, because
the time you should have it.
We did have the
check.
We did have the phone in the car because that's one of the things we do with it. We take it on trips in case there's an emergency. But of course, you know, once we get out of the car,
never occurred to you anybody would actually call you.
Well, not just that, but we're at the. You know, people like to have the phone because they want people to reach them, and while I'm at the fair, I naturally don't.
Even on the drive back, you could have looked and said,
that's,
did somebody
that's
call?
That's true.
But no.
So, for all intents and purposes, I don't.
Yeah, they don't really
have
one either.
Phone.
So, I have no experience at all with the Android operating system.
Nope, me neither. I don't even know what iOS stands for.
That's the operating system on iPhones iPads and iPods.
Well, yeah, I figured OS stood for operating system, but I didn't know what the I was.
And so technically I have iOS on my iPod, and I'm pretty okay with it. It's very sheltering. I don't feel like there's a lot I can do to it. Like, it's very helpful, but I don't feel like I have a lot of control over it, which is a thing that I have often felt with Mac products versus others. Mac products do a lot for me and assume I'm very stupid.
So what you're saying is Apple products, Apple operating systems tend to anticipate what the user is going to do and need and fills in those gaps. But if they fail to anticipate adequately what you're going to do or need, it can feel limiting.
Yeah, it's a bit of a gilded cage.
Yeah.
Whereas I've always often felt that PCs are the tools, but they are completely inanimate and indifferent tools. and this is an old stereotype, and I'm being a little cliche. And honestly, on modern Mac computers, like laptops and stuff, I feel that much less.
Mm-hmm.
But on the device, I still do. On the iPod, I still feel... I click on the pretty picture. You know, it's I'm not feeling empowered, but it's very effective and it's done everything I've wanted it to do.
Yeah.
As longtime listeners will know, we are not me and William, me and the producer, are a house divided, have been since we have been a house. I keep having PC laptops, producer keeps having Macs. Recently she got a new one, finally, thank goodness. And we just have our two laptops. We have no stationary system at all. We have our two laptops and we sit on the couch and we've got the Wi-Fi and we're all good. The producer could speak to this a lot better because she works on PCs at work and then has a Mac at home. But yeah, unfortunately I have no experience with Android.
Me neither.
I know people who like it. And I like the... politically, I like it.
Well, everyone I know who uses the Android system likes it. I mean, I can say that. Although I don't know if if the people I know who have it who don't like it, maybe they don't tell me that they have it, you know. Yeah. I mean, I pretty much only hear people tell me they even have Android when they're telling me how awesome it is. So maybe the people who don't like it just aren't talking about it. I don't know, which would be the opposite of how it usually goes. Usually people only talk about something when they want to complain about it. But
there's a certain self-selecting thing. The people who talk about it, they picked it for that. Yeah, yeah. My father-in-law has a Droid phone, so I'm assuming it has Android on it. I don't know, though, for sure. And he seems to like that fine. He has some old man complaints about it, but they're old man complaints, so.
Old man complaints.
In my day, smartphones did this. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
I feel bad. You know, Mark is such a dedicated fan, and he's always commenting on our blog and everything, and we can't really answer his question adequately.
No, we're the wrong... You need the magical cell phone hat.
Well, I suppose if he wanted to ask other people, like any of our other listeners, he could do that.
You people who know crap, go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and give Mark your feelings on iOS versus Android.
And he'll give you his feelings.
He will. he seems to take them in chunks now. He'll listen to two or three at once. He recently did sort of a dump. Which is a thing. When you're at the blog, check the old entries as well. Because sometimes later, people catch up and they comment. We get all sorts of interesting comments that way.
Yeah, Mark does that especially.
He always does that a lot.
His comments are always fun to read as our...
largely a lot of insults at me. But I feel like our audience likes that. So go ahead.
He's got all kinds of interesting insights.
He does, and finds a lot of links and stuff. So check that shit out.
He and Blood Sparrow are very consistent.
Blood Sparrow
and
possibly helpful. Hard Hat number two. Almost.
You keep saying possibly, and that bothers
me. I feel like Mark has a special title, and I feel it's weird to designate a second one of the same thing. I feel like she should have her own.
Oh, I see.
And she has her own on Happy Jacks, but we won't use that here.
she does.
It's really kind of rude.
Oh.
somebody accidentally mispronounced her name one time, and then it went downhill from there.
Oh, gracious.
But I feel it takes... And also then I feel like we're going to get into a whole thing where Sir Guido and Kia and...
And Beth, who we love Beth them all,
and Azure Town are all going to be like, so who's number three, and who's number? And I'm going to be like, oh my god. And then it gets really tricky because some people, like Mark and Blood Sparrow, have been there since the beginning. People like Kia B, who is a very loyal and devoted listener and poster on the blog, started episode 8, and as far as I know, has never gone back to read the other ones. So, you know, then it gets a triggering little thing, you know? I don't even know.
It's hard when you're parents to play favorites with your children.
It really is. Yeah, so... But, I mean, Hard Hat number one, Blood Sparrow, I think, needs a different thing. The producer's back, so she can decide.
When am I deciding?
I don't know. How do you feel about iOS versus Android?
I'm on Team William.
Wow, did we sell her a t-shirt?
For those of you who didn't hear or catch on right, the woman who married me and lives with me, before hearing any question or anything, stated, quote, I'm on Team William.
Well, to be fair, she knows that I'm on Team Producer, so it's kind of we kind of agreed.
It's a mutual defense pact.
Yeah, it's alliance.
I feel like... You guys have finally decided you can hide it no longer, and it's time to tell me that you're in love and you're leaving me. People write into the blog and say, does it sound to you like they just told me they're having an affair? Like, this is weird. This is weird. Did you just come back from...
No, that was later. Tomorrow.
Can I tell them?
Do I have my stripes on?
No, that's true, you don't.
You can tell. All
right. Producer's doing something awesome.
Okay.
She is doing, maybe some of you have heard of this. I had heard of it, but Couch to 5K. Heard of this?
No.
We're still mostly on the couch.
It's the thing. Mm-hmm. It is a program by which people who do not run at all, over a 9-week process, get to where they can run 5K.
Wow.
Yes.
Excellent.
She and the neighbors are doing it. a few days a week is how you do it, and you start off very simple, where it's a little bit of walking followed by some running, and then a little walk, and just sort of circuits,
right.
And very little in between, and then over time you just grow it and grow it and grow it, and they have finished week one and on to week two, and she's been doing it, and it is super awesome.
But you're not extremely doing
impressed. I even got
hell
up
no.
You what?
I even got up early.
She got up early. I get up before her, and the night before she had to go. She's like, "I'm hoping tomorrow I'll wake up when you do, and I'll go do it." And I'm like, "That's nobody ever said." I'm hoping that when your alarm goes off and I still have like an hour on mine, that I will spontaneously get up early and go running. That doesn't happen. So I'm like, no, she's not going to do it. She did it.
Yeah. Well,
super awesome. I am wildly impressed with my wife, who is wildly impressed with William. So,
you know, it's like a presidential election, though. It's mostly about voting against the other guy.
I think so.
I wouldn't put too much thought into it.
I think you need to pause and capture the intense sadness of the statement you just said. Because that was not true in the past.
No, I suppose it's... But in most of the elections that I've voted in...
Most for me too, but not even all for me.
It's been that way.
That's very sad.
Yeah, it is.
And on that depressing note, we got to wrap this up for this week.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mark McKibben and Beth.
And we hope you have learned a lot and you can go out and start your own farm. If you haven't, go to your local library where they have books on how people used to do farms, but not so many on how they're done now.
Not so much.
Because Monsanto owns all those books. So, have a good week, everyone.
Yes.
Have a good week, William.
You too.
Have a good week, Trish. This is... like the lamest version of Goodnight Moon ever. And we will see you next week.
Next week.
You fuck my wife?
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.